Here on Gadget Lab, we dive deep into the tech universe, tackling questions like, is giving companies access to your genetic material a good idea? And are the latest phone releases really that different than the last ones? We want to help you make informed decisions about what is worth your attention. And here's something that is undeniably worth your time, a digital subscription to Wired. Lucky for you, we are giving Gadget Lab listeners an exclusive discount, 20% off an annual subscription to Wired. Just visit wired.com and use the promo code GL20 to get 20% off a digital subscription. Use GL20 to get exclusive access to stories on the latest innovations like AI, deepfakes, and VR, as well as today's most talked about people in technology.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike.
Lauren.
Mike, are you planning to take advantage of the Inflation Reduction Act? Are you going to buy an EV, maybe?
I can't really afford an EV, but can I get a tax credit for putting a windmill in the 100 square feet of concrete that I call my backyard?
Okay, I've been to that backyard. Is there any wind? There typically isn't wind there.
Oh, yeah, there's tons of wind.
Really?
Yeah.
Also, I don't know the answer to your question.
We should talk about it.
We should. Let's do it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Gadget Lab. I'm Lauren Good. I'm a senior writer at Wired.
And I'm Marco Calori. I'm a senior editor at Wired.
We're also joined this week by Wired writers Matt Simon, who joins us here in studio in San Francisco, and Ariane Marshall, who's joining us from a closet in Seattle. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello. Good to be back.
Okay. So last week, President Joe Biden signed a huge bill into law. It's called the Inflation Reduction Act. And as its name implies, it's supposed to curb inflation here in the United States. But it also allocates nearly $400 billion toward building renewable energy sources and basically retrofitting America, as Matt put it. That includes tax credits and rebates that we, consumers, can use on stuff like electric vehicles, heat pumps, and solar panels. So if you're wondering, well, how do I get in on it? That's what we're here to talk about today. Matt and Ariane have been parsing through this 730-page bill and figuring out what it all means. Matt, you wrote a story for Wired.com about how this massive climate bill can save people money. So does that mean Mike can finally buy his Cybertruck?
No. I mean, if that's what Mike really wants, sure. Go ahead, Mike. When's it available? 30 years? No, but so this bill is sneaky in a certain way in that it is giving out a lot of money for homeowners to prepare their houses for climate change. And that is through tax credits and rebates, which sounds like a terrible tax code stuff, but it's actually very interesting.
Can you tell us what the difference is between a tax credit and a tax deduction and a tax rebate?
Sure. So a tax deduction is so you make $70,000 a year, a tax deduction would be like, okay, take $5,000 off of that. Then you get taxed on $65,000 a year. Tax credit is a bit different in that it takes off a full $5,000. So if you get a tax credit for $5,000 on $70,000 of income, you owe however much tax on that. That's $5,000 straight off of that. That's just a lot more money. It's also just a lot more powerful for homeowners to get something like $1,200 for home insulation. That's coming straight off that tax bill. That's not a deduction, which is more convoluted. And this is just supremely powerful for many reasons because Americans like money.
Who doesn't?
And what about a rebate?
Rebate is point of sale. So rebates are more focused toward lower income and middle income people who maybe can't wait to get a tax credit for the next year or just don't have enough taxable income to actually make that worthwhile. So with something like a heat pump, you can actually get $8,000 of a rebate straight off of it at the point of sale. With a tax credit, it's more like $2,000. But again, this is meant, a tax rebate is meant for lower income folk who actually need more money to install these sorts of things.
That's interesting because when I think of a rebate, I typically think of when I buy contact lenses or something and they say, if you buy them, you get a rebate, but you have to mail in this little, this proof of purchase and this little like slip of paper we've given you, and then maybe you'll wait 60 days and maybe you'll get it.
It's annoying. This will probably be less annoying, though much more convoluted in the way that it's applied, because you have to get a contractor, obviously, to do these sorts of things. But that also means that these contractors are going to be up on these sorts of things because this is good for them as well. $8,000 off of what might be a $10,000, $11,000, $12,000 installation of a heat pump is, that's nothing to sneeze at.
So what are the key points for homeowners that they need to know if they're considering just taking advantage of any of these reductions or rebates?
So I think the key thing is that there are certain limits a year. So you get 30% off of certain home improvements for high efficiency improvements specifically. So like more insulation, better windows, better doors. You can take 30% off of each of those every year going forward for at least 10 years. That means that if you want to do windows 1 year, you can do that, $1,200 maximum, up to 30% of that expense. But that's just applied year after year. And you can just over time retrofit your home in these really important ways to prepare for, you know, cold snaps and hotter heat waves, that sort of thing. But just generally being more comfortable and more energy efficient in your home.
So if the idea is to get more Americans making their homes more energy efficient, what's the aggregate effect of that? Like, what effect will that have on our climate goals in this country?
It's really neat, actually, and it's pretty sneaky the way that they went about it. That sounds like nefarious. it's like it's a stealthy way to go about mass climate action in this really interesting way. So like you or I retrofitting our home is going to do a little bit. It's going to make ourselves more comfortable. But if you do this across the American landscape and you allocate billions upon billions of dollars for homeowners to do this, in the aggregate, that's actually going to make a huge difference. In the United States, something like 30% of energy usage comes from residential homes. That's a lot. And that has a lot to do with bad insulation. We just are not ready for this climate future of a hotter world. So the way that this bill is done is, again, the stealthy way to encourage individual action. But in the aggregate, that's huge for the country as a whole.
So a lot of benefits for homeowners, but I rent. So what's in it for me?
Right. You probably don't want to front $10,000 for a heat pump.
No.
Is what you're saying? That's on the landlord. Yes. So it's a little bit trickier with renters because you're not doing these home improvements yourself. But what you can do is talk to your landlord about these improvements being much more economical for them now, especially if they're able to get $8,000 off of a heat pump installation. That's going to be good for them in the long term, just preparing their properties for this climate future. And again, in the aggregate, if we get renters and homeowners all on board to think just fundamentally differently about how we live in the United States, we can't go on like this, just running our air conditionings like crazy or heaters like crazy because we have poorly insulated homes. What this bill will do is hopefully retrofit vast swaths of this country, whether you're a renter and can enjoy the improvements that your landlord hopefully does, or if you're a homeowner who wants to do this yourself.
And of course, even if you're not a homeowner, you could invest some of your money into a new electric vehicle. But we're going to talk about that a little bit more in the second half of the show with Ariane. For those of you who are waiting with bated breath to hear from Ariane. I'm curious, like, let's say that you are a homeowner and you can only afford the upfront cost of one of these clean energy or efficient items, new windows, solar panels, heat pumps. What's the one thing that you would say you can invest in for your home that would make the biggest difference?
This, I apologize, this is going to sound really boring, but it's really important. It's insulation. actually. We have a huge insulation problem in the United States. Our homes are just not as efficient as they should be. You can do great insulation and take 50% off your energy bills immediately. Before we go around installing lots of solar panels and heat pumps and things like that, we really need to think about this really boring idea of insulation. It's like squirting foam into walls and things like that. It's going to be very important going forward, especially as we have hotter heat waves. And that is, I think, where we need to focus the most effort. Then it just becomes an issue of labor, unfortunately. In the United States, we just don't have the people power to do all this retrofitting, but hopefully that changes going forward.
And will that change at all with this bill, with more money being put towards green jobs?
There's actually a very interesting incentive here for contractors to work in lower income neighborhoods. They get money for doing so, which I think is going to be great for those probably older homes that are less efficient. That will be a much bigger conversation we have about labor going forward, that we need training programs. It takes years to train people to do heat pumps, which seems simple to slap one on a house. It's not in any way, or to install insulation or doors or windows. We just need more humans to do this. They have training programs like this in Germany. We just don't have as many of them in the United States.
Matt, you've mentioned heat pumps a few times. Heat pumps are all the rage these days, and people are hearing a lot about them. I mean, one of our most popular stories on Wired.com recently was one of your stories about heat pumps. What are they and how do they work?
So hot right now, heat pumps. Just, they're all the rage.
Pun intended.
Climate nerds love heat pumps. They're so powerful in the climate fight. So what a heat pump does is basically works like your refrigerator in a kind of a strange way. So your refrigerator doesn't pump cold air into that space. It actually extracts heat from the indoor space of the fridge to keep your food cold. And that's why the back of your refrigerator feels warm. That's the heat coming out of that air. A heat pump works in kind of the same way in that it extracts heat from even cold outdoor air and then pumps that inside. And then in the summer reverses to act like an air conditioner, really basically like refrigerator. So you get best of both worlds there. The nice thing about it is that it is fully electric. It's not running on natural gas or anything. So the idea is to have these highly efficient heat pumps running in every American home, powered by solar panels on the roof. You can get $7,500 in tax credits from this bill on new solar panels, for instance. So if you fully electrify a home with these highly efficient heat pumps, we no longer need to rely on fossil fuels from utilities. The idea will be that in the future, American homes will be more active participants in the grid, and that we'll be generating our own energy, storing some of it in batteries, and then grid operators could then tap into that energy that we're storing. And then when we need to run our heat pumps, we do so with our renewable power. That's the big dream. And actually, this bill is actually going to push us pretty far in that goal.
I look forward to the days of personal heat pumps when we're all wearing vests.
I like
they're just powered
like
by heat pumps.
A helmet that acts like a refrigerator. I'm all for it.
I look forward to the Wired and Tired on that one. All right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to invite Ariane back into the conversation to talk about how this legislation will affect the EV market.
Hey, everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Ariane, you've been writing about how the Inflation Reduction Act affects EVs, everything from the vehicles themselves to batteries to delivery services. And this is one of the most interesting aspects of all of this, I think. You wrote on Wired.com that the new bill eliminates an old program that capped tax credits, but the bill introduces some new conditions for the cars and that consumers won't get the full credit for an EV unless the vehicle meets those specific requirements. Tell us about this.
Yeah. So they did some really interesting stuff with electric vehicles here. And a lot of it is doing something the U.S. doesn't do often, which is industrial policy. And that means they're kind of creating these new supply chains, new industries out of whole cloth, which is really interesting and kind of something you hear more about in Europe and China. So the way it works here is this new program gives a $7,500 credit to passenger vehicles, but you're only going to start qualifying for that credit in 2023 if the car you want to buy is assembled and manufactured in North America. And right now there's only about 20 or so cars that will qualify, some Teslas, some Ford vehicles, vehicles from the startup Rivian, a few others. So there are some pretty heavy duty constraints here. And then it gets even more complicated in 2024 when these new requirements kick in that require that the materials in the electric car batteries are from either from the US, North America, or somewhere that we have a free trade agreement with. So that really cuts out China as a partner in building electric vehicles. So, so much of our electric vehicle supply chain, and in particular, the materials that are mined and then refined to create these big, heavy, complicated, powerful electric vehicle batteries, a lot of that is from China. So a lot is going to have to change between now and 2024. For people to have access to that full $7,500 credit off their electric vehicles.
So we're talking about the car companies having to rebuild huge parts of their supply chains and have more manufacturing here in the US. And we're talking about battery manufacturers having to almost completely readjust their supply chains within just a couple of years. How is the industry going to manage that?
Yeah, so you are right. It's going to be very complicated. There are a lot of big moving parts here. But actually, we're kind of already seeing automakers begin to work on this. Earlier this year, we saw announcements from big automakers like Ford. They signed a deal to get more lithium in the US. And then just this week, we saw Volkswagen and VW sign agreements to get some of their materials from Canada. So already they're clearly starting to think about kind of the practical effects of this new legislation and how they're going to work around it.
Now, these credits, Ariane, they extend all the way to 2032. Does that mean that you could buy a car this year, but hold off on applying for any kind of rebate for the whole decade? Do you have to file for a rebate the same year you purchased the car? And also, we should know it's not retroactive, right? So if you bought that shiny new Tesla in 2021, and of course, the Tesla does qualify because it's made in the United States, you're out of luck, right?
Yeah, that is unfortunately true. Right when the bill was announced, before it was officially signed, a bunch of automakers who still qualified for the old credit program, they sent out all these frantic emails to customers and said, hey, you need to have a binding agreement with us so you can qualify for the current tax credit program and get money off right now. But if you didn't do that, you're kind of out of luck. And something I didn't mention before is that there are now income caps on these electric vehicle credits. So you could make too much money to qualify for these credits. But if you are lower income, middle income, thinking about electric vehicle, I would honestly kind of wait a few months to figure out how the government is going to apply these new programs, because they are complicated. And there are a lot of people who are very confused.
All right. So in a couple of years, there will be all of these new EVs out on the road, and that's a wonderful thing for the climate. But what about charging them? What about infrastructure? Is there anything built into the bill that is going to guarantee that the infrastructure is going to improve to serve this new market?
Yeah. So that is also in the bill. So first off, in the infrastructure bill that passed last year, there is $5 billion to build out this big, sprawling interstate charging network along highways. So that is already in production, and states are already trying to put those in along the highways. What this bill also does is you get tax credits now for building charging infrastructure. So for an individual, that could be in your house, you get 30% off of the price up to, I think it's $300,000. And you can also do that if you're a business too. And that's a really big deal. And I think something people haven't really been thinking about enough, because 27% of our transportation emissions, which is already like a quarter of what we emit in terms of greenhouse gas every year, comes from heavy and medium duty trucks. And also they release particulate matter, just like trucks are gross.
Do you mean trucks like passenger trucks, like SUVs or big freight
trucks?
No,
I mean those big old medium and heavy duty trucks that you see on the highway carrying, you know, all your Amazon Prime goodies from place to place.
And food.
And food.
I was wondering how guilty I should feel about my very old Jeep.
No. We're talking specifically about big trucks here. People can get money off for those as well. And they can also, businesses can get money off for building the charging infrastructure for those. Now, experts that I've talked to this week still caution that there's a lot to do on kind of the utility side, making sure that we're getting, you know, the electricity to where it needs to go. There's a lot to build. It's going to be really complicated. But policymakers are certainly aware that we're going to need to have a lot more charging infrastructure, and they're working on it.
So, like a year ago, there was a very different version of this bill bopping around Washington, and it was colloquially known as the Build Back Better Act, right? In that version of the bill, there was a tax credit for e-bikes, and now that's gone in this version, which is like a pretty big bummer. But I do want to note that 30% tax credit you were just talking about for businesses can also be claimed if they install certain kinds of micro-mobility charging equipment. So if you want to make your business more e-bike friendly and you don't have to install something that's going to charge an EV, you can install something that would also charge an e-bike. Isn't that right?
Yes, that sounds right to me. I would also agree that it's a huge bummer that the e-bike part of this didn't make it into the bill. There are so many cool e-bikes these days. They're coming down in price, but they're still really expensive. And I think the biggest opportunity for e-bikes is kind of replacing people's or household's second car. So if a family can get around with one car and then an e-bike that they can use to get their kids to school, maybe even pick up groceries sometimes with a cargo bike, that would go a really, really far way in combating emissions from transportation. There are some cities that are working on this. It's the good news in some states that have or are working on programs for e-bikes, but it's not coming from the federal level, and that sucks.
To bring this back, I think, to the intersection between our two beats, I think it would be great to talk about the kind of holistic home of the future, where we think that electric vehicles are separate. They're out on roads, but in fact, they're going to be a big component of decarbonized homes going forward. And I was wondering, Aaron, if you had thoughts as to how EVs actually play into our homes, not just the roads.
That's a really interesting question, and we should probably write a story on this.
no one steal our idea.
Yeah, no one steal our idea. I think there's going to be a lot of charging going on in single family homes, and there are a lot of places that are working now on getting charging up in multifamily dwellings, like apartment buildings, on streets. And I think it's really going to change the way that people think about using their vehicles and moving around cities and towns. But I'm not exactly sure. I think that's a great question. I'd love to hear if you have thoughts, Matt.
Yeah, I just always come back to homes becoming more active participants in the grid as opposed to just using energy. I think there's a future in which distributed electric vehicles across the grid sitting in garages, a utility can tap into those when there's a shortage of renewable energy on the grid, because we have to think about, well, the sun doesn't always shine, wind doesn't always blow. If we're not using fossil fuels to fill those gaps in the future, those gaps could be filled by electric vehicles just sitting there idle. That's what I keep coming back to. That also just requires the price to come down for EVs to get them into more garages and to decarbonize as rapidly as possible.
It also requires buy-in from landlords. To Mike's earlier point, right? He's a renter. I'm a renter. I think a lot of us here are. Whenever I think about exchanging my aforementioned old Jeep for an electric vehicle, I think about, well, if I had to move from place to place, would there be the infrastructure there to charge it? And could that vehicle then be used, to your point, as an energy source for the unit in some way?
Yeah. And Ariane and I, a couple months ago now, I think, wrote about what do city dwellers do about charging their electric vehicles if you don't have a garage to do so. And there's, I think, going to be interesting things happening in lower income neighborhoods in particular. We need to get more electric vehicles there because air quality tends to be worse. It's an equity issue as well. But yeah, the charging question is going to be interesting. Do we convert gasoline fuel stations into EV fast charging stations, that sort of thing?
Well, I hope all the policy wonks and legislators out there are listening to our Gadget Lab podcast, so when the inevitable revision of the bill comes or future revisions, some of these things are factored in. And more credits for e-bikes, right, Mike?
Please, yeah. Yes. That would have been nice to have. But in the meantime, we'll just keep on pushing.
That's right. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is from Bike Calori himself. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back with our weekly recommendations.
Hackers and cybercriminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston. And on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click Here. Stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machines.
Satellite. Engine ignition.
Click here.
And liftoff.
Click here every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Ariane, let's start with you. What's your recommendation this week?
Okay, my recommendation is an experience. Yesterday, I went to a baseball game. It was so nice. They're not that expensive. I mean, they're kind of expensive, especially if you get a beer, but if you don't get a beer and you buy cheap tickets, it doesn't have to be expensive. And it was just so delightful. And yesterday at the Mariners game, which is the game I went to, you could bring your dog. So we brought our dog. Oh. And it was the greatest. And then we walked around the field with our dog afterwards. And honestly, it was just the most delightful thing that's happened to me for a long time. So go out there and celebrate America's pastime with your dog, without your dog. It's lovely.
Did you get on the big screen?
We didn't get on the big screen, no, tragically. There were like a lot of other cute dogs there, unfortunately. And I guess they thought they were more photogenic. I'm not offended.
What's your dog's name again?
My dog's name is Cosmo.
Cosmo. All right. Well, you'll have to go back to more games so Cosmo can get his chance.
That's true.
And did the Mariners win?
The Mariners won.
Who did they beat?
They beat the Nats.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
So that's your old home.
That's right. It was, yeah.
Your new home beating your old home.
It's controversial.
Is your partner a Nats fan?
We've switched our allegiance to the Mariners a little bit. The Nats, I don't know if people are baseball fans out there, the Nats have mismanaged this season and we are not rewarding them with our loyalty.
Right. Well, also, the American League is better. We can all agree on that.
I'm actually a Dodgers fan, but sure, Mike.
I was going to say, I grew up a Mets fan, so. that's a great recommendation. Thanks, Ariane. I haven't been to a baseball game in so long, but we'll have to add it to the list. Maybe we should do a Gadget Lab podcast from one of those suites. Do you think we can get Condé Nast to pay for that?
Absolutely. I'm sure there's nothing that our bosses would rather spend thousands of dollars on.
Matt, we'll invite you. What's your recommendation?
Not baseball. I don't have a single understanding of all the words you just said about baseball. But anyway, neither here nor there. I would recommend a book called Children of Time, which I just finished. It's science fiction. It is fantastic. Broadly speaking, it is about humans engineering a virus to supercharge evolution in apes. And they're like, hey, we'll just fire it down onto this planet, supercharge the apes' evolution, and they'll become human-like in just a few generations. Things go slightly awry, and it infects spiders instead. So the book is a absolutely fascinating and entertaining tale of what happens when you supercharge the evolution of spiders and they take over a planet. Amazing.
Wow. What happens, without spoiling too much?
I would spoil. It's all twisty and turny. I wouldn't even dare give you any more information other than whoops, we infected the wrong species with a supercharged virus.
And do the spiders maintain a spider-like size, or are they like Hulk spiders?
Good question. I think they're described as about the size of your arm.
Oh my God.
So sizable. But they're like hyper-intelligent. They invent all sorts of crazy stuff. I won't spoil it, but it gets pretty wild. Highly recommend.
I look forward to the Hollywood adaptation starring Rick Moranis.
Perfect. Bring him back.
Who would direct it?
Sam Raimi, of course.
I thought you were going to say like Michael Bay or something.
No, the best director of spiders of any sort is Sam Raimi, I think.
Was that because he did Spider-Man?
Yeah, sure. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Who
that,
was,
that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Slightly larger than these spiders. Okay. In the sense of their size of his arm. He's bigger than that.
Mike, I already know what your recommendation is because earlier in the newsroom, you were sitting there at your desk just a few feet away from me and you went, oh my God.
Yeah.
And I said, oh no, what's happening? What terrible news now just crossed your desk?
No, it was great news.
All right, tell us about it.
I got the Wordle answer today with a guess, which never happens to me. It's usually like a long protracted process to get the Wordle answer. But my recommendation is Wordle because it is now in the New York Times app. So if you're a person who consumes the New York Times and you're a person who also consumes the New York Times on your phone through the app on iOS or Android, there are always games at the bottom. And for a very long time, we have not had Wordle, even though the New York Times purchased Wordle last year. It's now in the app. It just showed up like last week, I think. So now it's easier than ever to play. And that's it. Very simple recommendation. Get into it. It's a lot of fun. If you're not familiar with Wordle, first of all, who are you? Second of all, it's a game where you have to guess a five-letter word through a process of elimination using all of the words in the English alphabet. And yeah, you get six tries. I don't know. I never need any more than three, like today. Just kidding. It is a lot of fun and now is native. So do it. Wordle it up.
Wordle. And since by the time people hear this podcast, it'll be tomorrow's Wordle, you can tell us what the word was today.
Yeah, it's needy.
I guess. N-E-E-D-Y.
So it was a process of elimination
okay.
for me because I guessed two very common words. I usually start with crate
okay.
or irate, depending on the day.
So you're using up an A, a T, an E.
Yeah, all the common letters.
Yeah.
And I got was an E, and it was in the wrong place. And then I guessed some other word, and it was an E at the opposite end. And there were also none of the letters other than the E were used. So I was like, all right, well, what letters do I have left, and what word can I make with them? And I typed needy, and that was the answer. And I was like, are you kidding me?
And that's when you exclaimed, oh, my God.
Yeah, I really
did.
Newsroom. And then Lauren did the psychoanalysis. And she said, well, maybe that was from your subconscious and you're actually feeling really needy today.
Well, it's true. Well, not you, but you said earlier this morning, my God, I'm getting like 80 text messages and DMs right now from all these people. And so I was thinking you were thinking that maybe the people around you were needy.
Yeah.
Like your writers.
I am needy because I need to know what your recommendation is.
Well played. So I finally finished the Anna Wintour book. Listeners of this podcast will know I've been talking about this for the past few weeks. I finally finished it. It was very good. That is not my primary recommendation this week, though. But can I tell my Anna Wintour email story?
Yeah.
Anna Wintour, she is our boss's boss's boss here at Condé Nast. Most people know who she is. And occasionally she might show up on one of our Zooms, and very occasionally we get an email from her addressed to the company in our inbox. And one time last year, I actually got a direct email from Anna Wintour. 2 years ago, we had another podcast at Wired called Get Wired. Some of you might remember it. It only lasted for about 6 months in 2020, and it eventually won a Webby Award. And after it won a Webby Award, I got an email from Anna Wintour addressed directly to me, saying congratulations, and just another sentence or so, like just wishing me well, and you should be so proud. And there were like exclamation points in the email.
A note of huzzas.
Yes. And I was like, oh my God, I got an email from Anna Wintour emailed me. My goodness. And the following week, I was hanging out with some friends in New York City. And two of these friends in particular had worked very closely with Anna. And they asked how work was going, and I told them a little bit about this podcast. And, oh, by the way, it won a Webby Award. And, and by the way, I actually got an email from Anna Wintour. I mean, you could tell I was pretty blown away by this.
Yeah.
And they said, well, what did it say? And I described the email to them, and they said, oh, there were exclamation points? Yeah. Her assistant wrote that.
Trombone noises.
So anyway, That was my email from Anna Wintour. That's my story.
Directed the assistant. With
absolutely.
General kudos.
Absolutely.
Toward you. Yeah. Even if there weren't her fingertips.
Yes.
She spoke your name.
Yes. That is going on my LinkedIn profile. Thank you, Matt.
Also, so, when she sends company-wide emails, it always says no subject, and it's terrifying. Because you're like, this is it. This is it for me.
Yes, and that's what happened. It was directly to me with no subject, so I assumed it was a company-wide email, and then I opened it. Lo and behold, was addressed to Lauren.
Wow, that's very special.
She just never has a subject.
Yes, we should power aspire. Move.
Yeah, who needs
to
one?
Send our emails without subjects?
Straight to the point.
Unnecessary yes. field.
Yeah, straight it's to the point. But the book was actually fascinating. So I guess like that is a recommendation of mine, but it's not my primary one this week.
Oh, that's not.
Sorry.
So Lauren, what is your recommendation?
Okay. So you're so needy, Mike. My recommendation this week is on point with the rest of this conversation, which is the NPR Life Kit series focused on money. So NPR Life Kit is a really wonderful podcast and it's very popular, but they have since branched out and now there are these sub Life Kit podcasts. There's one for health. And anyway, so I've been listening to the one for money. And it's great because it's really on point. Many of the episodes over the past 6 months or so have been focused on inflation and how to save money if you're really feeling the pinch from inflation. But sometimes they bring in outside guests that just are, you know, maybe they'll bring in an auto expert who tells you, here are the three things that you need to get your car checked for on a regular basis so that you don't end up spending thousands and thousands of dollars in repairs down the road. And that was actually really inspiring to me because it made me think, oh, I haven't had my tires checked in a really long time. And I called the tire shop and it turned out I hadn't had them looked at since 2016. And I was like, got to add that to the list of things to do this year. And they talk a little bit about how not to spend emotionally, because a lot of times our finances are tied into our emotions. Just how to save money. So I have really enjoyed listening to NPR Life Kit Money, and I highly recommend it.
Nice.
I wonder what my deep existential despair causes as far as my spending habits are concerned.
It could be a lot of things. You could do a little retail therapy and not realize that you're doing it. You could be ordering more takeout and justifying it in some way because you're busy or stressed and you're not really realizing how much you're spending on takeout. It could be a lot of things.
You don't need those 10 milligram gummies.
Well,
maybe you do,
you need
Mike.
The 15 ones.
Oh, spoken like true Californians.
Yes.
All right.
Obey the law.
Yes. So when you're done reading the book about the pre-2008 Condé Nast era and the wild expenses, listen to NPR's Life Kit on money and how to save money.
Solid.
All right. That's our show for this week. Thank you so much, Matt and Ariane, for joining us. That was great.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And thanks, Mike, as always, for being a great co-host.
Of course.
And not too needy. And thanks to all of you for listening. If you have feedback, you can find all of us on Twitter. Just check the show notes. Our producer is the excellent Boone Ashworth. We'll be back next week. Goodbye for now.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.